Good afternoon. You're listening to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOI during our fall fun drive, where we're asking you to put the public in public radio and chip in for those programs that you know and love, like the Diane Rehm Show and like Midday Matters. We have a goal this hour of $500, looking to hear from five folks. 260-452-1185 is the number to call with any questions, comments, as well as a pledge of support to WBOI. You can always go to our website, nipr.fm, and pledge your support that way. If you have any questions for the show, Midday Matters at nipr.fm, or you can post on our Facebook page, which is Midday Matters. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio during the first half of our show today by Dr. Joseph DeCamp and Dr. Teresa Herman. Thank you both so much for being in the studio today during our fall fun drive.
You're more than welcome.
And the first half of today's show, we're going to be talking about Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is the entire month of October, which generally just spotlights women who are both survivors and going through breast cancer and brings awareness to treatment and to causes and to prevention. So we're going to start off, Dr. Herman, with you to talk a little bit about where you both work and recent accomplishments that the center has been given.
Great. Thank you so much. As Sarah said, I am Dr. Teresa Herman. I'm the Chief Medical and Chief Quality Officer at DuPont Hospital. And we are celebrating actually for the month of October with breast cancer awareness because we just received an award from the National Consortium of Breast Centers for our center and have been given the award of being a Breast Center of Excellence. So we're very proud of that designation, and it's been a lot of work. We've worked for 5 years to actually gain this recognition.
What does that mean exactly, a center of excellence? I mean, it sounds like a good thing, a positive thing, but what does that exactly mean that the center has had to go through to get that stamp of approval?
We've actually been collecting metrics and data for the last 5 years to prove that the women that come to our center receive the highest quality of care. So the National Consortium sets metrics, sets quality metrics that they want us to meet. And if we're good, then we'll meet, we'll be in the top 75% of breast centers. When you get to the Center of Excellence designation, you have to be in the top 10%. So 90%, so you have to be an A player. And we've actually shown that for the last 5 years, and our metrics have improved, and we've done a lot of things to benefit women. And the metrics that we look at are, how quickly do we get you diagnosed? If you have a mass or a lump, or you have an abnormal mammogram, how quickly can we get from, I don't know what this is, to, I know exactly what this is, and let's get it out.
Right. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
260-452-1185. If you have a question, comment, or you'd like to pledge your support and help us get to the goal of $500 this hour of Health 360, I want to turn to you, Dr. DeCamp, about some of the terminology we hear a lot, especially during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, like mammogram. A lot of folks, let's just start with the basics of what exactly is a mammogram and when do women need to start making sure that they are getting one?
Sure. Basically, breast imaging, when we look at a screening of a population, specifically looking for breast cancer, a mammogram is still the first defense that we look through. So typically by age 40, there's some argument out there as to what age one should start. But the main recommendations now, by age 40, a woman should have a mammogram on an annual basis. And it is a four-view study. We take kind of a top to bottom and a side view of each breast. It's done kind of the walk into the department, have your mammogram, leave the department. In our practice, usually within 24 hours, there will be a final report back. And that's a screening study. So we might look at 40 or 60 screening mammograms in one setting. These are women who've come in from various places to get their mammogram as just a routine annual health check. So it's an X-ray test. It's kind of the first way we try to look for any early signs of breast cancer that may be visible on a mammogram.
Okay, so around the age of 40, you recommend that's when women need to, and from there on out, is it an annual thing, or how often do you need to make sure that you're going in to get tested?
In the U.S., we still push for starting by age 40 and having an annual mammogram. There's been a lot of European studies and a lot of controversy here recently within the past couple of years about whether women should wait till they're 50 and whether they should have a mammogram every other year. And there are some European countries that do mammography, screening mammography on wellness checks every other year. You'll find breast cancers earlier. You'll find more breast cancers if you look every year. There's always a debate if you find them sooner than you need to, if waiting an extra year matters. If you're that gal who comes in with a early breast cancer and you found it this year and it wasn't there last year, you certainly feel better about knowing it's there sooner than had you had to wait. So
Sure. Still
in this economy, people argue trying to save money, a mammogram every other year is cheaper than doing a mammogram every year.
Mm-hmm.
But we still push for annual mammography. That's the right choice.
260-452-1185 or NIPR.fm to pledge your support during this hour of Health 360 Midday Matters. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and I'm joined in the studio today by Dr. Teresa Herman and Dr. Joseph DeCamp. We're talking about Breast Cancer Awareness Month, the first half of the show. Later on, we're going to be joined by Dr. And Health Commissioner of Allen County, Dr. Deborah McMahon. We're talking about mammograms right now and breast cancer awareness. What are some of the... I think there are some women put off going in, and this is kind of a generalization for anyone. If there's maybe bad news, you might put off going to the doctor for a little bit. I think some women are kind of scared of the process of going through a mammogram and maybe finding out bad news. From if you were talking to somebody who was their first time going to the office to get themselves checked out, how long does the process itself take? Is it painful, or what should a female patient expect?
Good news, I think, for most, if not almost every center of breast health like ours, it's a technologist who is dedicated and who is probably in the top tier of their touchy-feely ability to deal with patients. Mm-hmm. This is a very personal exam, and women are obviously going to be worried about whether it might be painful. We have great techs, I think, probably across the board in any general city of our size. A mammogram just about anywhere is going to have a compassionate technologist who's going to work with the patient. So there's not a whole lot of discomfort. Some patients won't fully understand, and most technologists will explain to the patient the importance of positioning and the importance of compression. So any little cartoons you might see that are talking about how terrible mammography can be and how much there's compression and pressure and pain, there really is science behind having to get a nice, even, contrasted image with good compression, and a great technologist talks the patient through it. Most patients leave saying that it was an absolute easy test,
mm-hmm.
Very, very easy to get through. It's a routine health check, so most patients, I don't think, come in, get a mammogram, worried about whether or not they might find something, because most times, especially after they had a mammogram every year for several years, it's usually normal.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a screening test for women concerned about good health, and fortunately, most women on a routine basis, once they're 40 years old, they're pretty darn good about coming in every year and getting the mammogram. It's just been very, very common, very expected.
Mm-hmm.
So most patients, I think, are doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. And we said that about 40 years of age is when we need to start making sure that we're going in for mammograms as women and those concerned for their health. What if you have a family history of breast cancer? Is there cause to get a mammogram before 40?
In certain cases, I think the general population, we look at 40 years of age as the start when breast cancer becomes common enough,
mm-hmm.
that trying to screen the entire population, that an asymptomatic population, so they're not having symptoms. There are some women who will have breast cancer in their history. They may have a mother, an aunt, a sister, a grandmother with breast cancer. Some of the common wisdom over time has been that if you have premenopausal breast cancer in a family relative, first degree family relative, so a sister,
mm-hmm.
or a mom in this particular case, you might consider screening about 10 years before the age of their diagnosis, and the cutoff for that is, but once you're down to age 25, we don't do routine screening mammography. So if a woman at age 35 had breast cancer, she may have a daughter who we would recommend by age 25 to consider maybe starting annual screening mammography. And that's kind of pushing it a little bit. Now, there are genetic tests. There are women who are positive for various genetic markers that put them at definite high risk for developing breast cancer in their lifetime. Same there. If they are a positive for breast cancer gene, they will start screening mammography as early as age 25. And then we throw in other tests. They might have a screening breast MRI, which is a different way of looking for breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So those are the general recommendations for most patients. If they don't have a family history of breast cancer in premenopausal, or if they don't have positive gene testing, mm-hmm. they'll come in, we tell them, starting around age 40.
Okay. 260-452-1185. If you'd like to pledge your support or give us a call with any questions or comments this first half hour of Health 360, we're devoting to Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We would like to thank Anne, who pledged at the very top of the hour, saying that she really enjoys Terry Gross and the Diane Rehm Show. Thanks so much for pledging. If you'd like to join Anne in pledging your support to WBOI during our fall fund drive, NIPR.FM is where you can make a safe, secure pledge online, or 260-452-1185. And Dr. Herman, I wanted to turn to you and ask, how many women are you all seeing from maybe on a weekly basis, or how are we doing as a state with the amount of women that we're seeing? Is there any sense of that? Is that number increasing? Or
well, the incidence for Indiana is about 115 per 100,000 people mm-hmm. in the population. So that means that out of 100,000 people, about 115 of those women will be diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So the way our center is set up, we're actually the center of excellence, and we do most of the diagnostic. So if a woman gets past the point of they've had a mammogram, it's abnormal, and we need to go to the next step. We need to do a biopsy where we take a little sample of that lesion. Mm-hmm. Then they would come into our center, and Dr. DeCamp and his team would then come in, and they're highly trained. So they help us be the center of excellence. Mm-hmm. And then we would actually take a small sample of that lesion and send that to pathology for further review so that they can actually diagnose it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have a lot of women coming in. Indiana is not well known for getting mammograms, mm-hmm. to start screening. Mm-hmm. Once we get them in the screening process, then we are seeing a lot of women that do follow through then. And as Dr. DeCamp said, they are, once they get started and they find out that it's not a bad test to do, they're more apt to come back. Mm-hmm.
260-452-1185 if you have a question or comment, or you can send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. We're talking about Breast Cancer Awareness Month here, which is the whole month of October. So if you have any questions, comments, we'd love to hear from you. 260-452-1185. Now, we've established that 40 years of age is the time where a mammogram is a good idea, but what about self-checking, you know, just examining your body yourself? When is the recommended age to start doing that?
Well, probably any age where a woman is able to think about doing a monthly exam on a regular basis, looking for lumps or bumps in the breast. So that can really be, you know, adolescence on up. I don't know if there's a whole lot of science behind proof that a monthly self-breast exam is going to find more breast cancers than, say, a screening mammogram, mm-hmm. but it's free. Everybody, hopefully most people, have the ability to examine themselves. And once you get beyond that maybe discomfort of trying to look for a lump or a bump that you don't want to feel, mm-hmm. A lot of gals get really, really good at doing it on a routine basis, first of every month or some sort of a schedule. And they will occasionally come in as a patient who had a mammogram every year. The mammogram was normal 6 months ago, but here she is with what she feels is a new lump, and she may have just found her breast cancer that we couldn't see on her previous mammogram. One of the things that's kind of a misconception, a lot of patients, surprisingly, when you ask them about symptoms or you talk to them about what you might be seeing on their mammogram and you're worried this might be a breast cancer, many times their first response will be, well, it just doesn't run in my family, so I don't assume I'm at risk. And the number one risk for having breast cancer is being a girl. So any female is at risk for breast cancer. They change the numbers up every 10 years, but roughly 10% of the U.S. population, maybe 1 out of 9 lifetime risk for breast cancer. But those types of risks are because you're a female, not because your mom or your sister or your aunt had breast cancer.
We have Shirley on line 1 with a question about mammogram. Shirley, welcome to Health 360.
Thank you, and thank you for this excellent program.
Thank you. What's your question?
My question is, at what age do you no longer need mammograms? I'm 69, and my doctor told me I didn't need to have them anymore.
That's a good question. I think there have been some studies and some recommendations that maybe you hit a certain age and you can no longer at least have annual mammography. I believe that used to be at age 75. If you were in good health and no other risk factors, maybe you could start every other year. We routinely recommend annual mammography for a general population in good health until they're, I guess, too old to think about it anymore. So at 69, you're still a young gal, and mammography is a great test at catching early breast cancers. We see patients into their 10th decade, into their 90s,
right,
that will still be coming for their mammogram. I guess if there's good news when you get older, not always, but breast cancer in general tends to be less aggressive in a 69-year-old as opposed to, say, a 39-year-old. And also, if you're 69, you might not be looking at another 60 years of productive life. But a 29 or 39-year-old gal is, easily facing 40 or 50 years of her future. So some doctors might have kind of a notion that you're old enough, you don't need to get a mammogram every year, because even if you do develop a breast cancer, it's probably not going to be your final exit. But I think from just general health, if you're a capable woman that is still active, you should have an annual mammogram until such time as you just can't because of health reasons, or you're maybe not aware of what you're thinking anymore.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks, Shirley. And we had a write-in from a listener, James. He wanted to know, is the radiation involved with a mammogram dangerous?
Wow. In a word, no.
Okay.
The issue really boils down to, is any radiation, if it's not necessary, posing a risk? And the answer to that would always be yes. We don't know how big that risk is. We do know that radiation in high enough doses, especially in younger breast tissue, can induce an increased incidence of breast cancer. We mostly know that from, atomic weapons studies after World War II in Japan. Some health clinics where years ago with tuberculosis being treated, we had to use a meaningful amount of radiation with these routine fluoroscopy exams, which was an X-ray tech, a test looking at the lungs in people with tuberculosis. Some of the younger women going through those repeated tests had increased risk of breast cancer later in life. Obviously, a woman who has gone through external beam radiation therapy for something like Hodgkin's lymphoma younger in life, we know that lots of radiation to the chest wall in a younger female increases her risk for breast cancer and thyroid cancer and some other things. But in and of itself, a mammogram has an incredibly low dose of radiation. No way to prove that a woman who has a mammogram every year is going to get enough radiation to potentially increase her risk for breast cancer. There's just no way to do a study that could prove that because it's such a small amount of radiation.
Mm-hmm. 260-452-1185. If you'd like to call and pledge your support, we're looking to raise about $500 this hour of Health 360. You can always pledge online, nipr.fm. We also had another person call in and wanted to hear a little bit more about screenings. Is there anything else we can discuss further besides the mammogram, any other type of screenings that you all do at the center?
Well, that's a great question. One of the things that is a problem with mammography, it's an X-ray test, and it's looking at tissue types in the breast. The breast is pretty much so comprised of fat and glandular tissue. And it's tough technically to separate glandular tissue from breast cancer tissue because they have very similar densities. So some women will have lots of glandular tissue. We talk about their mammogram image showing dense glandular tissue. Women with dense breast tissue are not necessarily at risk of getting breast cancer more frequently, but they're sure at risk for us missing it. It just doesn't show up very well. So other studies like ultrasounds and some recent big study did comparison with screening ultrasound and screening mammograms and doing them both together. They definitely find more breast cancers if a woman has dense breast tissue and she also had an ultrasound. But after that exhaustive study, they still don't recommend screening ultrasound as part of a routine checkup, even if you have a lot of dense glandular tissue. So Our number one screening test is still mammography. If you're at a very high risk for breast cancer, for a couple of reasons we already discussed, breast MRI is a really, really good test. Breast cancer has a harder time hiding on an MRI study. But a mammogram might be a $100 to $200 test. An MRI might be a $2,000 to $4,000 test. So it's a huge expense. It's a little more involved with the technique of obtaining the images. So it's only recommended in women with really high risk of breast cancer.
Great segue to another question I was going to have. You know, we're so lucky to have DuPont Hospital and all the resources that we have here in the center that you guys are a part of. But what resources are you aware of for women in Fort Wayne where financial circumstances might be an issue? Are there things that they should definitely be doing before they go to the doctor? So self-examination would probably be one thing to do to maybe keep the thought of cost in mind, and not going to the doctor unnecessarily. But I guess maybe some of the free health clinics here might be able to point people in the right direction if they think that they have found a lump or something that doesn't feel right in their chest.
Yes, I think that's one thing to do is to go through the Matthew 25 mm-hmm. and through Neighborhood Health Clinic. They can also help. I believe that there is a grant within Indiana that once a woman is diagnosed with cancer, if they do not have insurance, they can go through this grant for breast cancer and for cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm. Good to know. 260-452-1185 or NIPR.fm to pledge your support during this hour of Health 360. Or if you have a question or comment about our topic during the first half of our show, we're talking about Breast Cancer Awareness Month and treatment, screening, and what you need to know if you are a female. If you have any questions, we'd love to hear from you. Again, 260-452-1185. Is there anything else in the process of the actual screening that we need to let folks know, Dr. DeCamp, about anything else that they might encounter? Or if they have found a lump during a self-examination, how worried should they be? How quickly do they need to schedule a mammogram?
Well, breast cancer in and of itself doesn't move very fast. Typically, everybody's heard horror stories of somebody who found a lump on Tuesday and were dead by Friday, but right. Breast cancer is a fairly slow disease process. Most breast tissue is lumpy. So any woman who's examining her own breast is going to tell you, boy, they're lumpy and bumpy. And most lumps that are felt, even on clinical exam, will not be a breast cancer. So the key, I guess, is if you feel a lump, to follow up. You shouldn't let cost be too much of a deterrent. I think a screening mammogram is a relatively inexpensive test. It's a good test. It's as good as we have right now. Trying to work up a gal who comes in with a lump, she might get additional testing, such as an ultrasound. But missing the breast cancer is a much bigger mistake than ignoring the lump. So it's tricky, and I think they should always be able to talk to their doctor or talk with some local healthcare provider that can give them maybe a heads up on a place like Matthew 25. I mean, it's a great clinic. They don't do mammography there, but they certainly are a resource where people can come in and get direction to what to do next.
Excellent. And we've talked a lot about self-examination and the mammogram itself. What's the next steps if you have found a lump? A biopsy?
Well, it depends on what the lump looks like. If gal has a finding on a mammogram, or if it is a lump that we feel, we determine if it's suspicious enough that it needs sampled, in which case, if it's going to get sampled in the imaging department, we can do either with ultrasound as a guide or with a mammogram machine, something called a stereotactic biopsy. Occasionally, the only way we can see the abnormality is under MRI, so we also do biopsies under MRI. All three of those modalities are a needle. Most women that go through any of those modalities for a tissue sampling will tell you that they didn't feel anything much after the numbing medicine. There is numbing medicine up front. That's a needle poke, so that is sometimes a little bit of a discomfort. But the biopsy procedure is almost always painless. I mean, not even a pinch. And the risk is incredibly low, and the yield is incredibly high. We can tell them definitely what it is, if it's a breast cancer or if it's something that can be ignored.
Okay. 260-452-1185 or NIPR.fm to pledge your support. We are wrapping up the first half of our show on breast cancer, and I want to thank you both so much for coming in, Dr. Teresa Herman and Dr. Joseph DeCamp. Before I let you go, it's our fall fun drive, and I understand that you both are public radio supporters. So I was just going to quickly start with you, Dr. Herman, if you could maybe say one thing that you really enjoy out of public radio that might inspire somebody to get on the phone and help us make our goal at $500 this hour.
Well, I have three kids, and we actually like to listen all together, and Car Talk is the favorite of the family.
That's excellent.
It wakes me up in the morning. It's on my car radio to and from work. I sometimes actually work out of state, and I know each NPR station wherever I am. So to me, it's a great resource. I can't imagine any better organization to want to support. I think it's a great thing.
Great. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today on Health 360.
Thank you.
We're going to be back with more of Health 360 here on WBOY, and Allen County Health Commissioner Dr. Deborah McMahon will be joining us. 260-452-1185 or NIPR.FM to pledge your support and help us on our way to make that goal of $500 this hour of Midday Matters. And thanks.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
You help pay for public education in Indiana, but from the Capitol to the classroom, the payback isn't always clear. You can find out how the state's policy impacts your family in our new State Impact Indiana Project, a local national collaboration between Indiana public broadcasting stations and NPR. You can hear the stories during Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition on NIPR, and dig deeper with a click on the State Impact logo at NIPR.fm.
On Fresh Air, you can hear interviews that make you see the world in a new way.
Every drink of water you take, every pot of coffee you make is dinosaur pee, because it's all been through the kidneys of a Tyrannosaurus rex or an Apatosaurus many, many times, because all the water we have is all the water we have ever had.
You just never know what you'll learn next on Fresh Air. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Welcome back to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOI. If you'd like to pledge your support this afternoon to Health 360 and WBOI, we would love to hear from you. 260-452-1185 or NIPR.FM to make that pledge of support. We also have that toll-free number if you're outside the 260 area code, 1-800-471-9264. I'm Sarah D'Elia, host of Midday Matters here for Health 360, and I'm joined by Dr. Deborah McMahon, Health Commissioner of Allen County. Thanks so much for joining us, Dr.
Sure,
McMahon.
No problem.
And I'm going to let you take it away and introduce our next topic and our guests.
Well, this time we wanted to talk about something that I think is kind of a quiet epidemic that people don't really realize, and that is falls. Mm. Most people don't realize that one out of three adults age 65 and older will fall, but less than half of them will actually tell their physician about this fall. Mm. But it can certainly begin to change a lot of behaviors. Even if there's not a severe injury as a result, they can really start isolating themselves. They become very fearful they're going to fall again, and it can just really kind of lead to a gradual decline of folks. So wanted to talk about that today, and more importantly, fall prevention. So we have two guests with us from Aging and In-Home Services, Maureen Widener and Shatora Wake.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Ladies, before we get into all the stats, while people are still eating, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about your agency?
Okay. Aging and In-Home Services is the area agency on aging for Northeast Indiana. And we serve the 9 counties of Northeast Indiana, so we have a pretty large service area. Last year, we served over 41,000 individuals. We serve not only older adults, but also individuals with physical disabilities of all ages. So we actually have our age range from newborn to over 100 years old.
Well, I didn't realize you also handle younger people with disabilities.
We do. Actually, about 40% of our clients are under age 60.
Good to know. Mm-hmm. Now, we were kind of joking about this in the lobby, how a lot of people, when they hear the term aging and in-home services, well, that doesn't really apply to mm-hmm. me. But on average, when do you find people start entering into that period of life when they could benefit? Not the disasters that wait until, there's been a disaster. But those people, when is a good time to start thinking about checking out the different services that you offer?
Well, I really think that because of the wide age range that we serve, it's good for everyone to have an idea of the services that we provide and how to connect with the services through our Aging and Disability Resource Center. In the Resource Center, it is really kind of a one-stop shop for anything related to aging issues or physical disability issues. So it's important for people to know how to connect to the agency, calling the agency and the Resource Center. Don't wait until there's a crisis. Mm-hmm. That's what we normally typically see, people calling when there are already very stressed, there's already been an illness or an accident of some sort, and they're needing services very quickly. So it's wonderful if people plan ahead. And like I said, even if it's just knowing where to call, that's a big piece.
You want to give us that number?
Sure. It's the local number is 469-3036, and the 800 number for the outlying counties is 1-800-552-3662.
If an adult child would have a concern about a parent, and can they call in and get information about
Absolutely.
Services offered?
Absolutely. Actually, we get calls from professionals, from the hospitals. We get calls from family and friends. It can be a neighbor who maybe just wants to call and find out some information about home-delivered meals to give to an elderly neighbor. That's fine, too. We will provide the information to whoever is calling.
And one thing before we start talking about falls, I did want to, can you remind us of the SHIP program, which is so critical for elderly people, or not elderly, people who are on Medicare? Mm-hmm. It's such a confusing time of year when they have to go through this open enrollment. Can you just remind the great service you guys offer?
Absolutely. The SHIP program provides counseling for what Medicare supplement would be the most appropriate, what Medicare Part D plan would be most appropriate for the individual based on the medications they're taking. We can also help people get enrolled in low income subsidy and Medicare savings programs that they may not know exist otherwise. Which can help pay for your premiums and co-pays through Medicare. So you can call that same 469-3036 phone number to find out information about the SHIP program. Parkview Hospital also has mm-hmm. a SHIP program, and there are programs out in the counties as well that we can connect people to.
And I would just encourage, again, older children, talk to your parents about this. They may not know this resource is available and may be a little bit confused about all of the different forms and everything, and offer to go with them or make the call or whatever. But it's really critical to make sure that you get lined up with the right plan. Shatora, let's kind of switch a little bit now and talk about falls.
Okay.
What do you are some of the most compelling statistics? What is it that makes falls just such a public health issue?
Well, in Indiana in 2009, there were over 7,900 fall-related hospitalizations in the older community. Let's see, in Indiana in 2009, there were 288 fall-related fatalities that resulted. The total cost of about $28.2 billion dollars of injuries in the U.S. in 2010, and they project that about $54.9 billion dollars will be the projected total of annual direct and indirect costs. for fall-related injuries. And so you can see it's very important that we, you know, get this under wraps and have initiatives in place to prevent falls.
Mm-hmm. And just to kind of give people some local perspective, when you look at our numbers here, 3% of the deaths so far this year in Allen County have been fall-related. And on average, every year, between 2 to 3% of our deaths are fall-related. And again, what makes that so disappointing is that that's something that can be prevented, usually with a few simple steps. And maybe we can talk a little bit about that, Shatara. What are some things that people can do to really, not only for themselves, but as an adult child, can do to help prevent falls in the home?
Well, recently we had an initiative where I partnered with individuals from the Department of Health, Turnstone, Manchester College, Lutheran Life Villages, and Parkview at a local community fair. And we had balance testing, balance and gait testing that can be done. There are home safety checklists that can be completed to see what hazards are in your homes that can cause a fall. And there are steps that you can take to correct those problems. Medication reviews are very important. There are certain medications that help cause or add to, you know, your actually may cause a fall. Some other situations you may want to look into is exercise. We offer an enhanced fitness class at the Renaissance Y, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 10 to 11. And then we have another one at Salem Manor, Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10:30 to 11:30. And that is open for walk-ins for that first visit. And then you can continue to come. Exercise is very important in strengthening, you know, your muscles, which can enhance your balance and help prevent falls as well. So some other things you may look into are having vision tests done as well. With the balance testing that we did at the fair, we gave the clients that came in the paper of their results and encouraged them to go and take that to their family doctor.
Did you find many folks there at the fair when you assessed them did have, in fact, balance problems?
Yes, there were a few with some deficits. One individual came in with some active bruising going on as well. And so, yes, we really want to address this.
Yeah, there can be a lot of different causes for folks to fall. It can be either because of something of their own body. I always remembered what Dr. Rudy Cashman said was that one of the biggest predictors of mortality in older folks is muscle mass. And, you know, we all start losing it probably about age 40, 45, we start losing it. And I think people get a little confused because we're always talking about exercise, but I think they get a little confused that what you really need to incorporate too, other than just the cardio, walking is great, biking is great, those sorts of things are great, but you really have to somehow make up for that muscle mass you're just losing by aging. And so that's some of the really benefits of some of these other classes are that they actually offer some strength training in addition to the cardiovascular that we're all used to. The other issue that you talked about, and I think is really important for people, is to think about the medications they're on. We have to remember that probably 70-80% of folks have high blood pressure and are on medications. By the time they get to be 65-70, most people are on some sort of blood pressure medication. And one thing I think we're not really always expert in reminding people is that what that does is block your body's ability to do the normal types of adjustments that you would have if you get up quickly, like in the morning, just to get up out of bed. Those medications block your body's ability more or less to increase the tone in your arteries and help maintain blood flow to your brain so you don't feel lightheaded. Once you're on those kind of medications, you just always have to remember that when you're changing position, you're going to have to do it slowly, those sorts of things. But other medications can cause the balance problems that you were talking about, and it's really important that people talk to their physicians about the different medications they're on. Or a lot of people don't realize they can even go to a pharmacist and make an appointment to talk to a pharmacist about the different medications. Do you find that people are receptive when you start talking about these interventions they can make? Or are there some interventions they're a little more resistant to? Like removing throw rugs?
I haven't seen much, you know, resistance. They're very appreciative to get the mm-hmm. information. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully they put it into practice once they're home. Mm-hmm.
Do you do like a home visit to assess the environment that somebody's in to see if there are fall risks or fall hazards in the home? Is that something that...
We do have case managers that go out to homes and they can take the fall risk assessment with them. Mm-hmm. Historically, we have not gone out specifically to do the fall assessment, but it is something that we would love to do mm-hmm. in the future. And now that Shatora has kind of become our fall prevention mm-hmm. specialist, you know, that might be something that comes down the road as fall prevention initiative evolves.
What are some of the more common hazards that people have in the home that really increase their likelihood of falling?
Well, I think some of the real common ones are poor lighting in the home. You know, is the stairwell well lit? You mentioned throw rugs. That's a big issue.
And they won't get rid of them. My mom keeps adding one every year.
My mom does the same thing.
She's just trying to get under my skin.
Too much furniture, and you know they don't want to let go of that very easily either. And mm-hmm. and it is hard to change your environment, mm-hmm. but you know, those are some of the big things. Make sure you have handrails.
Yes.
At all the airy steps and can you think of any other, Shatora, that seem real obvious?
What in the bathroom? Are there special things in the bathroom that people should be? Does the science really support that these things are beneficial for folks to invest the money in?
Well, the grab bars, of mm-hmm. course, in the shower.
So in the shower. Mm-hmm,
in the showers.
What about by the commode? Do you need to have... By the toilet, do you need to have
You can if you have difficulty getting back up into a standing position. That mm-hmm. would be beneficial. If you're going to keep the throw rugs, maybe have the non-skid backing.
No, let's not keep the throw rugs. I really see those as like such a danger because people, the older you get, it seems like you shuffle. Mm-hmm. You know, you mm-hmm. do a little
Absolutely.
Shuffling.
And
it's
mm-hmm.
just like,
mm-hmm.
to me, they're just death.
I thought of
death
one
by
more.
Throw rug. Yes.
Pets.
Oh, yeah.
Pets getting in between legs and feet and that is often the cause of tripping.
So what do you do about that?
Well, you know, I think it's, you know, most people would not want to get rid of their pet.
Mm-hmm. No, I wouldn't even suggest that.
Yeah. So I think with that one, it's just to be extra cautious, you know, and maybe know where that animal is as you're moving through a room.
I'm wondering if you put like a bell or something around mm-hmm. their neck or something mm-hmm. like
that. Yeah, that's a good
idea. You don't know they're down mm-hmm. there, right?
Right,
You don't realize
exactly.
that. Okay,
mm-hmm.
that might be something to do. What about, are there any modifications outside? I mean, I want to keep people as active as they can be. People need to be able to do things like work in their garden or work in their yard if they want to do that. Or, you know, I encourage people to be as active as they can be. Are there things that they need to do on the outside to make sure that they're less likely to fall, especially around wintertime?
I know with the stairs, they recommend maybe painting the edge of the stair a different color. That way they'll know where, you know, the edge is and they need to step down.
Mm-hmm.
Again, making sure they put the pellets or the salt out, you know, mm-hmm. if it's a snowy or icy day.
Mm-hmm.
If you have uneven sidewalks, I mean, that's not something that's easy, you know, mm-hmm. to fix, but maybe contacting those, you know,
311. 311 for the city.
Who have the power to do that.
Sure,
you know,
they'll appreciate
to address that. Making sure you use your walker or your cane if you need it.
Okay. What are some of the best exercise classes that the science would show that really seems to help prevent falls?
I know, based on some information I've seen, they like the Tai Chi.
That
classes.
Really does, yes.
I'm not very familiar with it personally, but yes.
That's what I've read. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, our enhanced fitness program is an evidence-based program.
Oh, good.
So it really has been shown to improve people's strength and balance. And you mentioned earlier the importance of strength training, and absolutely mm-hmm. anything that involves bands or light weights, that would be wonderful.
The exercise bands?
Right, exactly. And we use those in the enhanced fitness class.
We have just about 10 minutes left in this hour of Health 360, and I just want to remind folks that you're listening to WBOY 89.1 FM, and it is during our fall pledge drive. So if you'd like to get in your pledge of support, 260-452-1185 or nipr.fm. We would like to thank James Connell for pledging his support, as well as Dr. Peter Rothman. Thank you so much for pledging and listening to Health 360. We really do appreciate it. If we could hear from just two more folks during the last 2 minutes pledging their support to WBOY, we would really appreciate it. Again, that number, 260-452-1185 or nipr.fm.
Pledge. it's boy, I tell you, we live in a global world now, mm-hmm. and you just need to know what's going on. And I think, you know, NPR does such a great job in really informing you. And that's just what's going on locally. You guys do a great job, you and Sean,
thank you.
With the local news. But I think it really does such a great job with just informing you about the world. I mean, you have to listen to it every day to know what's going on, I'll tell you. Kind of getting back to falls and fall prevention, do you guys do much with osteoporosis? Do you see much of that in your patients? Do you find that diet is a big problem with older folks in general, and how that may affect their risk of falling?
Well, I was going to say that we do not we are not very involved with osteoporosis testing necessarily, mm-hmm. but of course we certainly are seeing a clientele that is very likely to have osteoporosis issues. We do have a nutrition program, and course nutrition is always an issue, and there's many reasons for that. Can be the the availability of food, mm-hmm. or it could also be their dentures are not fitting well. So it can be a variety of issues. So we do work with our clients and do nutrition risk assessments on all of our clients. As far as osteoporosis, clearly if you have osteoporosis and you fall, mm-hmm. you're going to have a mm-hmm. much bigger issue going on, and much more likely to have a fracture, which can create all kinds of other issues for the individual. And maybe the person who has been independent at home is not going to be in the future. So it's very, very important to prevent falls in those individuals.
We have just about 8 minutes left of today's program, and Dr. Peter Rothman has put up some pledge money for us, which is very kind, and is going to be matching pledges up to $500. So if you would like to make your dollar go a little bit further during the last 7-8 minutes of this program, give us a call, 260-452-1185. Toll free, that's 1-800-471-9264. And so, well, thank you.
Yes.
So,
yes.
We really do want to hear from you. We really appreciate the comments that you leave us. And I'm going to give it back to Dr. McMahon to finish out this interview. But again, 260-452-1185 or nipr.fm.
Maureen, getting back to that nutrition, I find that really, really important, because really you start seeing when people get older, especially when they're living alone. Do you find that especially if there's one elderly person living by themselves, that that's when nutrition really starts to suffer?
Absolutely, sure. It's not fun to eat alone, mm-hmm. and to cook for one, and a person may begin to have difficulties with preparing foods as well. So definitely an issue for people who live alone, and we, when we're assessing clients, we certainly look at that.
Do you do any blood testing, like for vitamin D or anything like that, when you do assessments?
We do not, but we can, certainly we always recommend that our clients see their physicians regularly, and a lot of our funding sources require that a physician be involved, so, certainly they take care of that piece of it.
Okay. Do you want to talk a little bit about any of the other programs that you all have there for this population that might really be of real service to them?
Sure. Actually, we have just launched our family caregiver mm-hmm. program, and we were able to rehab a building out in front of our main office and kind of creating a campus. And in that building, the Allen County Council on Aging merged into our organization on July 1st. And so they occupy half of that building, and the other half of the building is our family caregiver center, which, family caregiving is such a huge huge issue in the United States, and family caregivers are providing a great deal of care to their loved ones. And so,
much of which they're not really prepared or trained or even physically able to do.
Absolutely. They are. It's not something, it's not a job you've applied for.
Right.
you're kind of dropped into it. And so they don't necessarily always know, what to do and how to handle things, anything from what are good body mechanics so they don't hurt themselves as they're trying to assist their loved one. How do they handle the stress that's involved? Most caregivers also have a job. They're in their mid-40s, they have a job and they have kids as well. And the average caregiver is providing 20 hours or more a week of care. So it's a big, big issue in the United States. And so we have created this center in the hopes of really meeting the needs of caregivers, providing trainings to caregivers. We have one upcoming on November 14th for how to survive the holidays. Mm-hmm. Lots of things, all the stress that is already a lot of people feel at the holidays is just compounded when you are in a caregiving situation. So we're going to provide a training to help people know how to better deal with that. So we're excited, and a lot of times it's the caregiver who is taking care of things like the house check for fall mm-hmm. prevention. So if we can connect with the caregivers and get this information out on all the services in the community, then they're much better prepared for their job as a caregiver.
Do you think there's an added value if an older child accompanies the parent that's going to end up being the caregiver in kind of listening to the materials, kind of hearing what's going to be expected of the caregiver?
Absolutely. I think it's always great, whether it be an adult child or even just somebody who's involved in the situation, because I think a lot of times, unless you've been a caregiver or are one, you can't quite imagine mm-hmm. everything that it takes. You might be talking about dealing with financial matters, dealing with healthcare matters, insurance. So there's a lot of things for caregivers to consider. So I think it's great if they have someone who can kind of walk alongside them and hear some of these issues, and then maybe it will be easier for that other individual to find some additional mm-hmm. help for the caregiver or just be involved and take some of that pressure off the caregiver. Absolutely.
Are you coordinating services like with some of the hospitals to let them know about this program so they could make a referral, say while grandpa is still in the hospital recovering, but we know when he goes home, he's going to need a caregiver to help him with his activities of daily living mm-hmm. so that grandma can be going to this while we're waiting for grandpa to be discharged?
Right. And we are. And we kind of get the word out a number of different ways. Anyone that calls into the Aging and Disability Resource Center, we kind of do a quick check to find out if they're a caregiver or, might need some information about the caregiver program. We also provide information out to all the discharge planners at the hospital. We have an upcoming kind of a focus group this Tuesday with professionals in the community who are going to help give input on issues that they see, either at the hospitals or at adult day services, at VA, all different levels of care.
Perfect.
Will be there to kind of give their input. So we really want to develop something that meets the needs of our community. So we're trying to get input from as many people as possible for that.
Well, boy, it sounds like a great program. Thanks, ladies, for coming in. Appreciate it. You want to give your number one last time, Maureen?
Absolutely. Locally, it's 469-3036 and 800-552-3662.
Okay, it sounds like a good program.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Dr. McMahon, for joining us today. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Matt Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1. We're streaming online at NIPR.FM, where you can also make your pledge of support to WBOI during our fall fund drive. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. Again, if you'd like to make a pledge of support, you have about 30 seconds left to get it in for Midday Matters. We have the toll-free number 1-800-471-9264, our website, NIPR.FM, or locally 260-452-1185. Thanks very much to everyone who pledged their support to WBOI this hour and throughout our fall fund drive so far. We really do appreciate it. Fresh Air is coming up next.